This podcast is a publication of the Engineering Management Institute, where we are committed to building professional development systems, including project management and people leadership programs that support the growth of engineers and their firms. Download our AE Industry Trends Report for insights on the Great Resignation, remote work productivity, and people-centric cultures. To get your copy, visit engineeringmanagementinstitute.org.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Women in Engineering, success stories from STEM professionals. In this episode, I will be talking with Dr. Christy Haygood, CEO of Elise Engineering Innovations, about the art of creating real value in engineering, the dynamics of high-performing teams, and the intricate balance between innovation and practicality. I'm your host, Tiffany Tichy, a senior mechanical engineer, STEM advocate, TEDx international speaker, and an internationally recognized author of children's books, which includes What Can I Be? STEM Careers from A to Z, as well as STEM Crew Kids Adventure Series. I'm also host of the Read It Right radio show on WDRB Media, owner of Thrive Edge Publishing, as well as owner and publishing consultant of Inspired Authors Publishing. And with that, let's jump right into today's episode. All right, now it's time to jump right into the main segment of our episode. Today, I have with me Dr. Christy Haygood. Dr. Christy, welcome to the Women in Engineering podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Hello, everyone.
Yay.
Let's rock and roll.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead into it. Could you start by sharing your career journey with us, highlighting the key moments that led you to where you are in the engineering field today?
Okay, great. Yeah, so I've had a pretty dynamic and also memorable career, I guess, over the last 17 years. I've worked at Raytheon, what used to be United Technologies, in their oldest elevator company and carrier divisions, as well as Honeywell before starting my own consulting firm. I began my career as a mechanical engineer and at Raytheon, and through hard work and tenacity and just steadfast belief in myself, I parlayed that position into subsequent positions with Raytheon as a responsible engineering authority in the Missile Defense Division, as well as a senior logistics engineer in the Integrated Defense Systems. Once I left Raytheon and went to United Technologies, I was excited to get out of defense and go to the commercial area. And I worked at Otis Elevator Company as a senior systems engineer. And then I became a senior engineer and manager at Carrier. And just, I guess, due to my strong string of success in that role, as well as being known and developing a reputation as being a people builder, as well as a profit magnet, I was promoted to associate director in the Engineering Productivity and Cost Group. And that really gave me a lot of wonderful opportunities to expand the work I have been doing at the business unit level into working at the corporate level across multiple businesses. And finally, that success parlayed into another opportunity where I went to Honeywell and was the global director for value and component engineering, and had a lot of huge success while I was there at that organization, including leading a global organization of over 50 engineers and having a record-breaking 22 months of growth by achieving over $28 million in direct material and productivity savings. So my career, everything I've done has led to many accomplishments, but most importantly, it solidified me as a technical expert, as an engineer, as well as a people leader.
Wow, I love it. I mean, the fact that you had a vast variety of different things that you've been able to get to and be able to use those skills to be able to go from there, I think that's amazing. So thank you so much for sharing your career journey. And so let's go into, what principles do you prioritize to ensure your engineer projects deliver significant value?
Well, as an engineer, particularly focusing on value engineering for the last 7 to 8 years, that's something that's near and dear to my heart, because it's not just the profits that we generate, but also the quality improvement initiatives that we put in place, as well as having a direct impact on existing as well as new product development. So some of the things I prioritize in terms of principles include proactive leadership, innovative thinking, exceptional quality, open communication and continuous improvement. And just for an example, you know, proactive leadership really does yield real value, because when leaders cultivate an environment where the focus is not just on working with their teams and a dynamic group of people, but also focuses on getting things done by removing barriers to execute that keep the project stuck. And if you're actively going after real value, you can't afford to have stagnation with your projects. Also being very clear on what the project requirements are, as well as what the stakeholders' needs are, so that every action that you as a leader, as well as the team, the engineering team do, you're making sure every action supports the overall vision and helps you meet your metrics. Because if you're not meeting your metrics, then what do you do, right?
That's right. It's all about the results. You got to be able to show the results. So I love how you said that. It is about the metrics. It's all about what is the end result that you're trying to get to. So thank you for emphasizing that and the importance of it, especially working as a team. Now let's go into maybe some notable innovations from your experience. Could you, you know, share any notable innovation from your experience that, you know, had a major impact when it came to engineering?
Okay, I think first and foremost, being that my background is as a mechanical engineer, I have to say the innovations that have been made in the computer-aided design tools, as well as processes, not just over the course of my career, but, you know, you can look at the last 30 years, have been game changers in terms of product development, whether it be hardware or software or even electrical design. And I'm thinking of innovations, you know, from when I remember when I started out in my career in the early aughts, you know, we were learning how to do everything by hand. We were also learning how to do some of the analysis by hand, like geometric dimensioning and tolerancing. Whereas now with all of the tools and the capability of those tools, you know, and we learned tools back in the day, hate to date myself, but, you know, it was very important at that time when we knew how to do both, right, by hand as well as using the tools. And then when you look at the tools today and the ones that are available to universities as well as an industry, you know, they can do the GND&T by themselves, you know, and that helps eliminate a lot of human error, as well as helps on keeping the projects moving, because it's much faster for the tools to do it than for you to do it. As well as, I think the biggest innovation that's all of us now is AI, specifically generative AI, where generative AI helps you produce various types of content, including text and visuals and imagery, and also data. Synthetic data, as well as other types of data. And so how we harness that and move our industries forward is going to be the big gotcha, I think, going forward in terms of who leverages AI as a competitive advantage and who kind of bemoans it as something that should be feared. So,
I mean, that's it. You got to be able to go with the trends. I mean, this is what is here now. So how do we deal with
it? Yeah. I mean, now we can plug in designs that we used to update manually using like Creo or Pro-E or GTX Image Raster CAD. If you really, you know, want to take it back, you know, now we can upload those into AI technology and ask it to make some of the modifications that we would have previously had to make by hand, even using those tools. So it really is poised to be not just the next wave, but a game changer for all of us.
Agreed.
Who leverage it.
Agreed. Now, let's talk about it. I mean, that's a great point with it. In your, you know, view of things, what are effective ways for engineers to assure their work adds substantial, you know, sustainable value when it comes to it, as far as what they do? What is an effective ways for it?
Okay, I think one, being committed to doing good work and not just quick, busy work. You know, sometimes, especially when we're chasing monthly metrics, we're chasing quarterly metrics, we're chasing those annual goals, particularly like in Q4 and particularly now in deep and this time of the year, you know, people just focus on just going. And I think stopping and really focus on, am I doing the right things? Why am I doing these things? Do these processes align? Do they make sense? And if they don't align, am I clear on what the gaps may be? Have I had those conversations with cross-functional teams that I should engage with? Because they too have a piece of my process, even if they're not ultimately responsible for the end result. So I think definitely being committed to doing good work is one. And also not being afraid to really focus on continuous improvement as a part of your key process. One thing I always say is better to measure twice and cut once than just start cutting. Because as we're trying to look at being successful in the engineering environment, time really becomes of the essence. And anything that you skip out and don't do or try to have a shortcut could result in you having a lot of time lost on a project due to rework. And my thing is always, if we could just do things right the first time, we won't have to worry about rework. We won't have to be bothered with warranty issues or quality issues or little things that come up down the line that if we had just done our due diligence up front, we would have caught.
Wow. I mean, you give those phrases, those terms I've heard of before, the whole, you know, with that. So just like with us engineers, we always have those phrases, trust but verify. It's like, make sure that we get what we need to do. Because like you said, you don't want to deal with the rework, and that just takes up time. So
no, and you're going to pay for it either on the front end or the back end. So you'd rather pay for it on the front end with engineering rigor than pay for it on the back end with your leadership being upset with you, your customers being disappointed and upset, and then the people in the field, the people who are the most customer-facing in service, having to deal with the technical fallout of whatever you tried.
That's it. Love it. That's great. So talk to me, what approaches do you find most effective for assembling and nurturing high-performing engineering teams?
Okay. Yeah, first, utilize strategic hiring strategies. You know, you want to make sure, and I'm saying this as someone who operated in a role as a hiring manager for well over 10, 12 years, and even beyond that, has worked on recruiting for like the last 17 years. You have to make sure that when you're looking at hiring, you're hiring people that are not only the best person for the role, but also that their skills are the best for the business. And when you're thinking about the skills, not just think about the skills you immediately need on your team, but skills that if you nurture and support them, you can grow and leverage them to other things you need down the road and really help facilitate not just your team functioning well, but also their own career dreams and aspirations is important. I think also, and you know that I am a big proponent of wellness for leaders and wellness in the technical spaces. I definitely think that we should all be practicing mindful management, because when we pay attention on purpose with care and compassion to our needs as well as the needs of everyone around us, we'll start practicing mindfulness. And making that a daily practice, I believe, is important because it helps leaders as well as their teams be more collaborative, be more reflective, as well as more resilient in times of uncertainty. I know the mindful management techniques that I put in place with my teams during the pandemic is the reason why we didn't lose our mind when the global supply chain imploded, right? Because we had to focus on, okay, we can only do what we can do. We can't control what we can't control, but we can't control our reaction to those external factors that have now made our job much harder. So instead of bemoaning everything is, you know, we can't find materials, we can't get product in the factory, can't get product out of the factory, I made it an intentional practice for my team. So let's focus on what's in our control. What projects can we move up and move forward because we know we have material available, right? What projects can we work on more and just finesse the designs even more? Maybe double check our testing so that when those materials become available, they're next in queue and we're not losing any lead time. You know, what suppliers can we be engaging with now just to see if they have the capability to meet our future demand, right? So that everything we do now fulfills the pipeline that we know we have coming. So by focusing on being solution-oriented and not, oh my God, you know, firefighting every day, all day, I think those are keys, exceptional keys to building and sustaining a high-performing team.
Wow. I mean, you touched on it. I mean, amazing. I mean, you talked about the mindfulness, you know, strategies. Can you talk about these management practices that you're talking about and self-care contributing to it when it comes to leadership effectiveness in the engineering sector itself?
Okay. I certainly will. So, you know, first of all, really executing strategic leadership. And I consider strategic leadership not just a management practice that allows you to meet and exceed your business goals and objectives, but also a way of being. So, and I kind of look at it in I'll give you my four panel about it. Because, you know, in the engineers, we love a quad chart, right? So first, I think you really should look at anticipating, you know, look for the change that's going on in the environment around you. Sometimes as engineers, we get so siloed on what our day-to-day is or what our project is. We forget to look around us at changes in the market, changes with the customer base, changes with the supply base, changes with how our cross-functional teams are engaging with each other, right? And so by constantly anticipating and looking for the change, you can definitely help be better prepared when something goes on, when something arises, right? I also think that, you know, challenging the status quo is imperative when you look at strategic leadership. You know, I believe that you should be a disruptor, not only in your niche, but also in your business operations as a team, as a leader, certainly as a senior leader. When I became the director's level, I made sure that I always tried to challenge whatever sacred cows we had or I noticed came up, because just as times change, our markets change. Our customer needs we have today are not what our customers needed 20 years ago. So where we have those key processes that's tried and true that work, yes, we should work to constantly improve them and follow them, but we also should look for areas where we can certainly disrupt it so that we can meet demands of the market today. I also think it's very important to be aligned and find common ground and constantly engage with not just your team, but the teams that you have to interact with, because no engineer gets it done alone, right? We all, whether it's our project and our names on the drawing, our names on the design or whatnot, there are 10 other people behind the scenes that, you know, don't get the front man credit for it, but we know we have to engage with them, whether they be manufacturing or software or electrical or manufacturing. You know, we have to engage with these groups in order to get to the finish line. And so you have to actively stay involved and engage with them, I think. And then lastly, you know, just learn and find the lessons. Like, I made it a conscious effort to make sure my teams knew it was okay to fail. And I think, as especially being leaders in an engineering environment, we have to create a space and an environment where mistakes are welcome and mistakes are okay. And our teams and the people around us know that they're not going to be penalized, right, for making mistakes. Because when you allow people to make mistakes, that's where innovation really grows, right? Because we find out 5 or 6 better ways to do something when we do something wrong. We also find ways not to do things, and we find them out quickly. The only thing I would tell my teams is just make sure if you're going to fail, you fail fast, learn the lesson, and let's move on, right? And in terms of just incorporating the self-care, I truly and strongly believe that as a leader, when you take care of yourself and you feel positive and energetic, you're able to focus better, you're able to help those on your team feel better. And in a technical environment, in the engineering environment, I think that it's just so important, because we often have stressors due to the technical nature of our jobs, but also due to the business objectives that we also have to meet, right? Because we can't just doodle on a design for 3 years and not actually have anything to show for it. At some point, somebody's going to want to see what we've been tinkering on, right? So I believe self-care gives us an opportunity to show others that we respect them enough to not only show up as our best selves, but that we'll also make space for them to do the same, right? Because if I in a leadership role, or I'm just on the team and I'm making a conscious effort to come to work energized, to come to work as my best self, and even if I'm having an off day, I'm still trying to have a positive attitude, right? Positivity really is contagious, right? So when you make that a priority, it helps other people also make it a priority, and it makes the work environment overall much better. And I just really believe, especially in technical environments, that leaders who prioritize their employees and make wellness one of their key metrics that they track, they tend to see the biggest returns in terms of like employee engagement, in terms of retention, in terms of employee satisfaction. And I think it's good when we all show up in a better mood, right? So anything that we could do, you know, understanding the stress of our positions, understanding the technical challenges of it, you know, it helps to have those moments and make it a daily practice, whether you're the leader on the team or you're a member of the team.
That's right. It's a team effort at the end of the day, and everybody's coming together to make sure we get the job done. So I love how you shared that. That's good. Now, you talked about successful strategies. Can you, you know, what elements do you believe are crucial for formulating a successful strategy when it comes to engineering projects?
Oh, well, engineering projects, I definitely believe vision goal alignment is key. I also think that knowing your weaknesses and mitigating them in advance is key, as well as focusing on execution and collaboration. I've already kind of touched on that quite a bit. And then consistently identifying and removing barriers to execute. You know, for example, one in play out of my productivity playbook is vision goal alignment, where I really focus on connecting the dots from vision to execution. And not just for myself as me being the leader of an org or the leader of a team or whatnot, of making it plain for my team and involving them in that process. You know, I can develop a compelling vision as the leader, but But bringing the engineers in and we all sit down to decide what our wildly important goals are going to be that directly support that vision, and then making sure that they understand that those goals should be memorable, they should be measurable, and they should also be meaningful so that we can all rally behind them, right? And then as we work through it as a team, you know, we kind of take a ball, do a round robin around the table and talk about, okay, now what external factors could impact this and keep knock us off, you know, our path, right? You know, are there any time leaks? Whether it be too many meetings going on in the week and not enough time for us to actually do work, which is a big thing in engineering, unfortunately. Or could it be, you know, a resource issue? Do we have all the resources that we need? Do we have all the connections we need on the cross-functional teams? You know, are we going to send an email to, say, reliability engineering and then be waiting 6 months to get a reply? You know, those are things that it helps as an engineering team to have a discussion about. Because what I may think are our weaknesses or barriers to execute may be different from what others on the team think. And then as the leader of the group, it's up to me to then see what if there is a disconnect between what the team sees and what I see, and then address those gaps. So definitely, I think those are key elements, crucial elements. If as an engineering team, you want to develop and design and produce, you know, quality products or services in a timely fashion that create revenue.
That's good. So how do you balance innovation? You had talked about innovation with practically, yeah, you know, to create a real value in engineering. How do you balance innovation with practicality to create real value in engineering?
Okay. Well, I think first you have to remember that even the best, most innovative designers have to have a market that will buy them. You know, we all have a guy that we work with. In my case, his name was Bob. Who was like the most brilliant, you know, talented person, but they would always design something that we couldn't sell, right? It was too expensive to even make, nonetheless, put out on the market and be competitive amongst our peers, right? So as we're trying to be innovative, we have to make sure that our designs and our products have a market that will actually buy them, right? Because it makes zero sense to design something that you can't sell, no matter how fantastic and forward thinking it is. Those are opportunities, I think, when we have, when they do come up, because they do, especially in new product development, right? That we should kind of go back and relook at things, right? Because maybe there's some features that we could do without in this iteration, right? And maybe that's an opportunity for us to already have like a version 2 or 3 down the line to actually build a technical roadmap instead of trying to have this thing break out in the market and do 1,000,001 things at a price that no one can afford and wants to buy, right? So I think that is important. I also think, taking that in consideration, that you have to constantly seek opportunities to improve existing products while balancing that cost to manufacture them. And that's why I think all engineers, no matter what their backgrounds are, it will benefit you to kind of read up on and have an understanding, even if it's a basic understanding, of value engineering and supply chain management. Because coming out of the pandemic where the global supply chain was just completely decimated, right? And we couldn't get materials in, you couldn't get chips in for electrical products, like everybody was affected. And I think the smart companies who come out of that with winning engineering and supply chain strategies are those who recognize it as opportunities to expand their supplier network, expand their in-house design team, expand their R&D budgets, right? Because we never want to be in a position where we're caught out without what we need again. And so I think those are things that definitely can be helped.
I love it. I mean, great tips. I hope the listeners are just really taking all these notes down because you're giving some good gems and everything. So as we close out, can you give one final piece of advice that you can offer to engineers to effectively navigate, you know, the complexities of the field, ensuring both innovation and practicality is in their contributions?
Okay. I think first of all, don't be afraid to put your ideas forward. No matter how long you've been in your field, how long you've been at that company, how long you've been on the team, like your voice matters, your ideas matter, because your idea could be the one that helps clear a roadblock, that helps redirect a stalled project, or it could be the next $1 million idea, right? You know, AI and ChatGPT, for example, was literally created by someone working at an existing company that had a big idea. What if they had just sat on it? You know, how we interact right now will be very different. Same with, you know, social media, same with video communications technology, right? So no ideal is a bad ideal. Only bad ideals exist are the ones that you keep to yourself. So, you know, don't be ever be afraid as an engineer to put your ideas forward. And if it's met with resistance, continue to put your ideas forward, right? And I think last but certainly not least is always strive to be a solutions person. I've always considered my niche, no matter what company I worked at, what my quote-unquote title was, what team I was on, from propulsion engineering all the way to refrigeration engineering, I always wanted to be known as a solutions person. You know, I don't just want to discuss the problems. I want to come in and share a solution. So I challenge everyone to go into every meeting, every discussion with a solution. You know, it may not be the best solution, but it certainly won't be the worst. But don't be afraid to just go for it and have a solution and a plan that you want to put up. Because, like I said, that could be the thing that helps move the needle, that helps everyone meet their goal. And I think it's best to just to go in with that attitude, that positivity, that energy, so you're not just commiserating on problems with your team. Because, I mean, when has that ever helped us? I mean, it makes us feel good in the moment because we know we're not alone, but it doesn't help us get anywhere closer to our goal. So certainly focusing on being a solutions person is very helpful for engineers as well as for engineering leaders.
Love it. I mean, that is amazing. And I love how you said that's when you go in, have a solution. You know, putting it out there, having the big ideas. I mean, all of that is some great tips that you've given. So talk to us. How can people get in touch with you further? How can people get in touch with you?
Oh, awesome. So you all can reach me on my website first, which is www.alyse-engineering.com. That's alyse-engineering.com. I'm also on LinkedIn as Dr. Christy Haygood. I'm on LinkedIn under my company, Alyse_engineering. I'm also on Instagram at Alyse-engineering, as well as on Facebook as Alyse.engineering. So you can reach me there. Also, if you want to email me, I'd love to hear from you, whether you just have a moment you want to share or you have a question about engineering, whether it be about leadership, productivity, or performance. You can reach me at hello@alyse-engineering.com. So that's hello@alyse-engineering.com.
All right, Dr. Christy, thank you so much for being a great guest. We appreciate all that you're doing and keep doing what you're doing.
Okay, thank you so much for the opportunity to share with your listeners. And I look forward to working with you all again and working with your listeners, hopefully in the future, to help engineer better leaders.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you won't miss our upcoming episodes featuring interviews with inspiring women engineers, discussions about industry trends, and much more. Go to womeninengineeringpodcast.com where you will find a summary of the key points discussed in today's episode, as well as links to any of the resources, websites, or books mentioned during this episode. Until next time, may your engineering endeavors be as remarkable as the women whose stories we're sharing. Stay curious, keep innovating, and engineer a better future.